Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Father, Mother, Brother, Sister, The Plague, and The Alabama Solution.
I'd like to start out today by talking about Jim Jarmusch's new movie, written and directed by Jim Jarmusch. It's called Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, and that's a sort of a repetitive sort of a title. And it, in a way, indirectly signals the structure of the movie. This is really a sort of a triptych of three different stories, but they're very closely related to each other. Totally different characters, totally different situations, but there are certain sort of motifs, little references that recur from one to another, and it makes it into a very interesting movie in a formal sense. And it's also a nice movie as a human sense. I don't want to call it a major film, but it's an interesting movie. So, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. As that title very accurately suggests, this is a movie about family, and it's very specifically about fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers in each one of the three stories in different ways. So, the first story has a young couple. They are driving to meet with their father, whom they haven't seen in quite a while, and he's an eccentric old guy. We know that from the beginning. The young man of the story is played by Adam Driver, the young woman by Maya Bialik, and the father is played by Tom Waits. An actor I'm not usually all that fond of, but he's pretty good in this movie. This younger couple, a brother and sister couple, Jeff and Emily, they are going up to visit their father. And when they get there, he's just this, as I said already, this eccentric old guy. And he lives in this old house, and it's all sort of run down. And he has a run down car, and the whole thing is just sort of, they wonder kind of how he's getting by. But he seems to be okay. They've brought him a bunch of groceries, and he seems to be grateful for that, and he apparently needs the groceries and all of that. On the other hand, one of them spots that he seems to have a Rolex watch there in his house, but no, it's just a fake, he says, not really, but and that's it. And then at the end of this little beginning of the movie, there's a little surprise twist, and then we go into the second story, which, as I already indicated, is very different from the first one. We are now in Ireland, in Dublin. And we have an elderly writer, and she is played by Charlotte Rampling, and her two younger daughters, they're not young, played by Kate Blanchett and Vicky Creeps, are coming to visit her. It turns out they do this every year. So they're going to have tea. Now, this old writer, the Charlotte Rampling character, she's very dignified, and she's been around a long time, and everything is set up here with a lovely kind of a tea, and everything's very formal and very elegant. Not fancy, but very formal and elegant. So they chit-chat. That's what they do. And the main focus in this one is on one of the daughters who apparently is kind of a rapscallion. She apparently is not nearly as dignified or well-to-do as her mother, but she's trying to disguise that fact. For example, a friend drives her to this tea, but the daughter asks the friend to pretend that she's an Uber driver so that the daughter can actually pretend that she has enough money to have an Uber driver, that kind of thing. And they have this little chit-chat during their little talk, and little emotions show forth in various ways during this. And then it ends. So there's not a whole lot that goes on in this episode, but it's a nice, engaging episode, and you get to sense the personalities of these three women. And then the last one involves a young woman and her brother, or maybe I should say a young man and his sister, who are, their parents just recently died. They lived in Paris, even though they're not actually French by ancestry, and they drive to the old apartment to go look through the place and kind of get it all stored away and make sure everything's in order now that their parents have died. And once again, we have certain things that recur. There's a Rolex there, for example. So, and not much happens in that episode either. In fact, not that much happens in any of these episodes, but we just sort of get little glimpses of personality. Now, this is the way Jim Jarmusch, who has always been a ferociously independent filmmaker, likes to make movies. He sometimes deals with families, and he deals with them in very quiet ways, little stories that very often barely have a story. But that's the way he likes to do it. He likes to sort of reveal little things through nuances and subtleties. Now, one of the interesting things about Father, Mother, Sister, Brother is that there are certain motifs that recur from one episode to another. As different as the episodes are, very different kinds of characters, except for the family relations, very different settings, very different kind of emotional undercurrents, we have certain things that happen. People, for example, do a toast with water glasses, and then somebody wonders, is it really okay to toast something or somebody with water? There are Rolexes, there are cars. There are particular things that people say, like, for example, the English expression, Bob's your uncle. There are skateboarders that show up, but in different ways in each episode. And this is, again, something that Jim Jarmusch simply loves to do, this idea of a kind of formal element to his films. So is Father, Mother, Sister, Brother a great film? No. But it's a very lovely, engaging film. I think people should really watch the movies of Jim Jarmusch. He's a fascinating filmmaker who has always stuck to his own guns, always been resolutely non-commercial, but has kept a career going and kept making interesting and sometimes terrific movies way back since the 1980s. If you want to see something that goes against all the sort of over-the-top, big, overblown stuff that we see so often in today's movies, Jim Jarmusch's movies are an excellent antidote to that. And it's a lovely way to, I think, go into the holidays here. A lovely movie which gives you some subtlety and some nuance, not the kind of stuff that the movies are usually dumping all over our heads. Next of all, a movie that does a bit of that dunking, a movie called The Plague. This is a first feature written and directed by Charlie Pollinger. And it is one of these Lord of the Flies type movies. It takes place in a sort of a strange setting. It's a water polo camp where a bunch of kids, 12 and 13 years old, boys, are being trained in water polo. But we see very little water polo, very little swimming or sporting in the movie. There is some, but not a whole lot. Mainly, this movie, which is called The Plague, is about one kid who is an outsider. The other kids just reject him. They don't like him. Maybe it's because he's a little bit heavy. Maybe it's because he has sort of a funny complexion. Maybe it's because of this. Maybe it's because of that. But they just don't like him. It's the way kids can be. When one kid is a little bit different, the other kids may band up and exclude him. So another kid enters into this who wants to be friendly with that excluded kid. But, it's not really clear he's going to be able to do that because now the other kids will be rejecting him if he gets friendly with the excluded kid. And, of course, as the movie goes along, and this is exactly what I expected, and it does happen, things get more and more sort of vicious, more and more sort of savage. There is one kid, for example, who is a real ringleader of these gangs, who has this smirky personality, and he's very well acted. I found him extremely obnoxious, which I guess is exactly the way he's supposed to be taken. And his interactions with both the new kid and with the rejected kid are kind of interesting to watch. And we see a few interactions among some of the major characters here, but mainly what we see is the whole thing very gradually and in a way sort of subtly become more and more savage as things go along. The message of this movie is the old story about how deep down within each of us there is a sort of an animal personality that is just waiting to come out. We have to keep it down. And when you're a kid, you may not be so good at keeping it down. And, well, you know, where things are going to go from there. It doesn't really turn into Lord of the Flies. It doesn't erupt in all kinds of mayhem or anything like that. But that's the general trajectory of the story. And it's called The Plague because that kid who was rejected, that's what all the other kids say about him. He has some sort of skin condition, and they call this the plague. And they spread this myth among themselves that if you touch him, you yourself will get the plague. And so if somebody accidentally bumps against him or something like that, then you have to run to the shower and scrub yourself and all that, or else the other kids will get after you. Now, I haven't mentioned one other character in the movie, played by Joel Edgerton, who is having quite a major season this year. He's been in more than one movie, more than one major film, and he's doing very well for himself. He plays the grown-up who is in charge of this water polo camp and in charge of all these kids. And he gives a nice performance. I have to say that even though Joel Edgerton is the nominal star of this movie, he only appears in a few scenes here and there along the way. When he does appear, he's very good. He's a sincere grown-up who is really trying to get some order here and prevent these kids from getting too out of control and maybe even train them in some water polo along the way. And Joel Edgerton does a nice job of this. But the main thrust of the movie is all on the kids. And they are very well acted, and they are very well done. I didn't find The Plague all that interesting a movie. Again, it's based on kind of an old movie and storytelling formula, and I don't think it brought a whole lot of new twists to it, but it's nicely acted. And if you want to see a bunch of kids acting like a bunch of animals, then The Plague is something you might want to see over this Christmas season. And finally, I want to talk about the least Christmassy of all three of these movies. But I just want to talk about it because I think it's very important. It's been out for a little while now. It's on HBO. You can stream it. And I just think it's a movie that everybody should watch because the subjects it brings up are so important. It is a documentary. It is called The Alabama Solution. It was directed by Andrew Jarecki and Charlotte Kaufman. Andrew Jarecki being somebody who makes really, really important documentaries and very often zooms in on really, really important subjects and really reveals things that are very important about the movies like Catherine the Friedman's and the miniseries The Jinx. These are very important films. And here he's done it again. The Alabama Solution is about the Alabama prison system. So as I said, this is not a holiday cheery movie. It is a very, very dark film, but it's a documentary, and it is all real, and it is all absolutely hair-raising and harrowing and shocking. And again, I think everybody should watch it. So what we have in The Alabama Solution is it turns out that the prisons are so badly run that the horrifically mistreated prisoners find it very easy to get a hold of cell phones, and they manage to film themselves and to talk and to record their thoughts, and sometimes to film other people and to film the conditions where they are. And those conditions are absolutely horrifying. And the very fact that these prisoners are able to record these things and communicate these things through cell phones, which they're not supposed to have, shows how badly run the prison system is. The title, The Alabama Solution, refers to the insistence of the governor of Alabama and the whole government of Alabama that they are not going to do what other states do. They're going to come up with their own solutions to these problems, which turn out to be non-solutions because things keep on getting more and more horrific, it seems, as time goes on. So what we have here are prisoners who have been kept in solitary confinement for a really long time, but may still have a cell phone in there, who have been deprived of this, deprived of that. They're treated horribly. And above all, we have beatings and murders and killings, mostly by guards on the prisoners. And there seems to be an astonishingly large amount of that. But of course, all you have to do is to say, well, hey, we had to do it for the safety of the other inmates. And then you just get away with it, and nothing happens to you. And we really, really see a whole lot of things very carefully documented in the movie, where things like that have happened and seem to be happening again and again. Now, the movie does have a sort of a narrative trajectory, even though it's a documentary. It's a very carefully shaped documentary. And eventually what happens is that inmates in various prisons, a lot of them all over the state, come together and have a strike where they refuse to do the work in the prison. The work that they have to do, by the way, for free. They regard themselves, and I think with some justice, as modern-day actual slaves who are forced to work for no or practically no pay, or else they get horrifically punished, and maybe they get horrifically punished anyway. So this big strike takes place, which is coordinated among all these different prisons across the state. And that works for a while, and then after a while, it doesn't work anymore. But at least the men do manage to get across some of their grievances and get some people to pay attention. But again, the Alabama Solution, it's not clear whether the state of Alabama will ever do anything about actually ameliorating these horrific conditions that these people are being kept in and sometimes are dying in year after year after year. So the Alabama Solution is a really, really stark and disturbing documentary. It has some really disturbing footage in it. There's one woman whose son was beaten up by guards, and she has his photograph, and she shows it a lot. And it is an absolutely horrifying photograph to look at, but you see it quite a lot in the movie. And she actually is bringing a case against the guard who was apparently responsible for this. And one of the people involved in this who saw it, who witnessed it, says that he is willing to tell what he saw and blow the whistle as soon as he gets out, which will be in 6 months when his sentence is up. And we have one of the little subplots in this documentary is this woman waiting for this man to get out so that she can talk to him and get the real story and start spreading it around. But then I won't tell you what happens, but things do not work out the way that everyone hopes they will. Well, everyone except for the accused guard, of course, and the authorities who run the prison. So The Alabama Solution is a movie which I think everybody should watch, and perhaps especially over the holiday season, because it calls attention to a horrific problem which does not only exist in Alabama, I must say, from everything that I know about this sort of thing, but Alabama is at the moment a flashpoint for these kinds of horrific situations and prison conditions and horrible suffering and murder that go on all the time, and I think everybody should see it and think about it and maybe even take some action about it. So The Alabama Solution is a really important documentary, one of the most important in a long time, and I totally recommend it. So that is my somewhat un-Christmassy story this Christmas week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Father, Mother, Brother, Sister, The Plague, and The Alabama Solution.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.